awesome. I remember when I was new. My name is Terry, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 24th, 1985. By the grace of God and the fellowship and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the only reason I'm standing up here. Because I would have died a long time ago. My husband, who passed away last year, used to say he's long past his expiration date. I love that. And I'll do what Florida does. My home group is 2250, and I got sober in San Francisco and have been in New York for a while too, but I have a sponsor and have all along, and I sponsor others, which, great idea, and get a sponsor if you're new. I know that there are some people that introduce themselves as newcomers, and I'm going to direct what I talk about to you. Because the rest of us are here, and we should know what we're doing, and I will remind them what we should be doing. But if you're new, if you don't hear anything else, I'm going to tell you, you're fucked. You are absolutely screwed. And I know this is, in my home group, you cannot use cuss words. So it's like, I came from California, and if you get on any California meetings that I went to, which I go to on Zoom, we did express it. But I love the idea of having respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, too. But I really know I'm screwed. I have a disease, and if you're new, I have a disease that I will never, ever remember why I cannot drink ever left to me. That's how screwed I am. I have a disease that will never remember that. And today, I spoke a couple times recently, and I talk about this because in all the 40 years, well, it was 39 when my husband died, and the day after he died, I can't even tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous will give you. He was sober, I think 41 years when he passed away. And the day he died, all of our AA people were praying, had been coming by Jim here at the hospital, and just the beauty of being able to hold each other's hands through the darkest times of our lives. And his brothers and his sister and his sister-in-law were all there when he took his last breath. And he had made amends to them. I had to make amends to them because when we were living in New York, we were, you know, we're crazy. You know, 20 to 25, I think you start getting the marbles back. But seriously. But that next morning, the hospice nurse had cleared everything out, so we thought. And because he, at the end, he needed some medications for his breathing. And I opened up the refrigerator, and there were two big bottles of some kind of dope. I don't know what it was. And the first thought I had, I was 39 years sober and worked the steps all that time, and that thought came into my mind, not to get relief like when we get high, but wow, there's enough there that I could kill myself with that. And it's the alcoholic mind. It's always there. It's always lurking. It's waiting. And so we have to persevere, we have to be persistent. This is no effing joke. It is a disease that will never remember that. So you say, you know, I remember one of my pet peeves in me is, I choose not to drink today. Okay. When the hell have I ever had a choice whether I picked up a drink or not? It is crazy, this disease. I have this, and I have a brain that will tell me, oh, you got it. You got this. You got this. You can got this. And why did we're so crazy? Why are we so crazy? Well, I'll tell you. I drank, from the first time I drank, was like the last time I drank. I love the big book. It has three sections where it talks about the different kinds of alcoholics. And it's funny because I used to always say two, but there's a section in More About Alcoholism where it talks about the real alcoholic. Like, what about him other than the certain kind of hard drinker? And I was the real alcoholic. I drank alcoholically from the first time I picked up a drink. Now, you may not be that person. You may be one of those who doesn't cross that line until later on. But once you cross that line, you're screwed. Once you've set up, once that disease, my disease, the disease that courses through my body, my mind, my body, my soul, it is a disease of, it's an emotional disease, it's a spiritual disease, it's a physical, and it's a mental disease. And people don't get us. People do not get us. The first time I picked up, we had planned it with my friend Shelley, who actually passed away last week, last month, sorry. And her boyfriend was with me, and I was 14, 15 years old, and I drank out back at school, and it was like chugging down beer, we were doing Boone's Farm, all that kind of stuff went early on, but, you know, I chugged it down, and the relief from this brain that tells me I'm a piece of crap, and that arising that we have, and it just, before that, I had been, you know, a nervous Nelly. I was a liar, cheat, and thief from a little age. You know what I mean? It's like, I when you confront me, I lie about it. You know, it didn't even matter. It was just, you know, I didn't have a clue. And I was always felt less than. I always felt like I loved it. My first sponsor, Lisa, always talked about that she had gone to, you know, she missed the first day of school. And didn't know the rules to life, didn't know the rules, couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. And that was my experience. I just didn't get it. I didn't get it. And I was always full of fear. And, I'm actually going to read this, and then I won't pick up the big book again. But I love this part because it really explains what I got it, like the emotional nature of it. Chuck Chamberlain used to always say that it's the emotional nature that causes us to drink against our will. Okay, got that. You're new. The emotional nature of our disease causes us to drink against our will. I mean, I remember the arising of fear, jealousy, anger, all the stuff that would arise, and I couldn't figure out. I wouldn't ask anybody, God forbid, but I just couldn't figure it out. And it talks about in, they're called the bedevilments. And if you're new and you do not have a big book, it's on page 52 in the big book. And nowhere in the literature describes my disease better than this paragraph. We were having trouble with personal relationships. Check. We couldn't control our emotional natures. Check. We were prey to misery and depression. check. We couldn't make a living. That was my experience. I couldn't. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to people, even though I really wanted to. I really wanted to help people. I believe we had these beautiful big hearts, and was not our basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we could see newsreels or lunar flight? Well, that was back then, before we flew to the moon and all that. But a basic solution to the bedevilments, and that's what bedeviled me all the time, every day, in my whole course of, I mean, just that fearful depression. Oh my God, come on, anybody who sat at the bar, you know, I mean, if you were a real alcoholic like me, I mean, I'd be, woe is me, and how the world had done me wrong, and, you know, that woman, how mean she was to me, or the boyfriend that was beating me up in the meantime when I got here, the guy I was with, I've been with him for 5 years, and I didn't go a week without fooling around on him. You know, it was because he was mean. You know what I mean? What the heck was I? You know, just the delusional thinking, and I'm going to tell you that the steps will take you away from that reality that is not a reality. We can't differentiate the truth from the false. It talks out in the doctor's opinion, and you know, it's like we can't differentiate the truth from the false. The alcoholic life is your normal one. It's the only normal one. And what does that mean? That means that you know, at the end of my disease, I was saying I wasn't homeless, but I was homeless. You know what I mean? It's like I had no place to live. It was like just the lies we tell ourselves. And so I found it. I didn't drink alcoholically for a while, and I'll tell you why. Because I had the misfortune or the fortune at 16 or 17 to have had a friend of mine's father who was in AA and the mom was in Al-Anon. And it's so funny now how Sandy Beach used to talk about erasing stories we used to tell ourselves. And I have a totally different story about what happened there up until a couple of years ago when I was talking to my friend Annie, and she's like, oh, no, it was my mom that was like, she was trying to get us not to drink. And she knew we were drinking, and she knew we were partying. And so she described the symptoms, the signs and symptoms of alcoholism to us. And I remember. It was drinking in the morning. It was not being able to stop. Blackouts. Hey, folks, blackouts don't happen to normal people. Just, they don't. They don't. And so this list that she gave me, so I remember talking to my friend Mary at the time and going, oh my God, I have all those symptoms, I can't tell anybody. You know, it's like that first time I drank, I blacked out. Normal people don't black out. I blacked out, I did stuff with the boy that I didn't remember, and the last night I drank, I was down at Baker Beach in San Francisco. You know, such a sophisticate. I was chugging champagne, going all over me, and it was like Pirates of the Caribbean. I always like to use that analogy because it's like in the Pirates of the Caribbean, they're just glugging and 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 glugging. You cannot get drunk anymore. It's like it just goes right through you. Oh my God, I never want to go back there. And I was hustling drinks at the Buena Vista with tourists with some Irish guy that I picked up. you know, and, you know, that's where I was at, you know. The progression of the disease was, I don't have a watch on, but so I drank alcoholically for the first time. And these friends of mine told me, so I started doing, like, I've got to control this thing. So I had all kinds of rules. Did you guys have rules? Anybody have rules? Anybody? Yeah! You have rules about how you're going to drink. And I knew you couldn't take the morning drink. I could have saved myself so much torture. Oh my God, how sick you get from the booze. I'm not a normal drinker. I would sit across from my mom, I would say, to talk about that. My parents were an alcoholic. Some people here, all your parents might have been alcoholic, you know what I mean? But my parents were not alcoholic, and we would be allowed wine at the dinner every night. And once we got to about 16 or 17 years old, no way, I wouldn't do it, because when I drank, it sets off that phenomenon of craving. And all I remember drinking, like, the wine with my parents, and all I could think about was going into the liquor cabinet and grabbing the single bottle of Irish malt that they had in there, because I would want more. So I knew not to drink with them. I knew not to drink with them ever, because my mother would be, oh, I'm starting to feel it after a, you know, oh, no more for me. I'm like, don't you get the point? The point is to get as effed up as you possibly can to shut off this brain. Dude, swear to God, when I look back, it's like, I grew up in Sacramento, California, and, you know, I mean, where did it get me? By the time I was 16, we were hanging out with people in the projects, you know, multiple rapes, you know, just that's what happened. That's how it goes. And starting to do drugs, and but those were the people that were available to get us the booze and the drugs. I went to a little Catholic school, so it was like, we weren't able to get them. And I think my parents did as much as they possibly could to have loved me and given me everything I possibly could need within their budget, you know? But it was never enough for me, and I didn't like them. And the way I treated my parents when I was younger, I mean, there was nothing pretty about how we view the world, you know, because we're a victim. And by the time I got to college, I had figured out that I had to just drink on the weekends, because I wasn't going to make it, and I had seen, my parents had taken me on a trip to Europe, and I saw, oh, you know how you were always looking for something that was going to fix you? Whether it be, maybe you went to multiple rehabs or whatever, there was always the man, the marriage, the kids, whatever it is that was going to fix you. I was going to get an education, because those European people that I saw were swilling wine, smoking cigarettes, and looking sophisticated, and I wanted that. And they were talking about politics, and so I was going to go to college, because I didn't do very well in high school. So I went to college, and then I saw what my drinking was like. All right, thank you. I saw what my drinking was like, and I saw what I was like. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to work. So I thought it'd be, Rachel, this is funny, I knew I'd always be able to get a job in a nursing home on night shift, drinking alcoholically. Isn't that the most pathetic thing you can imagine for a 21-year-old to be thinking. I was like, oh, yeah. Because I knew what I was. I knew the way I drank, and I worked the system. You can work it in college. Student loans. And I worked it. I worked the money. I worked the family. I worked everybody. And I was able to, you know, take classes later in the day and worked as a cocktail waitress in San Francisco. And I went to University of San Francisco, and I did finally graduated. They gave me a 4-year scholarship to nursing school. During nursing school, it opened my eyes to what alcoholism was. I worked as an alcohol counselor, and I just think that's really funny. And I was going to become an alcoholic counselor when I got out, and I just a little bit of water. I mean, my God. So what happened was, I lied, cheated, and thieved to get through school. And, you know, it was bad. I remember having to call out at clinicals because I was so high. I was in state up all night. By the time I got out, I really couldn't. I got a job in an office. I remember my graduation, I couldn't wash the stench off my body from the alcoholic body. I get in the elevator at the hospital, and I'll get on the elevator with people who are alcoholic, and you can smell it. It's like we don't physically process booze the same way as other people do. And once I started, I could not stop. That's why I did a lot of trying to control when and where I drank. And I loved other substances because it allowed me to be an awake drunk and not in a blackout as soon. Because I wanted to be awake for it, you know? It's like I wanted to try to enjoy, but it stopped. And what my bosses took me aside, I was working an office job. Can you imagine? One of the office, I was working an emergency little clinic, and I remember the nurse I worked with, she said, "For God's sakes, honey, would you just call out the night before so that I'm not getting called in after I put rum in her coffee?" So there was a bunch of us that were alcoholics working in that office. So anyway, so what ended up happening for me, because I had 40 years of sobriety. I'm going to get on to that. But it's like, if you're new, it's like, I have a disease that I didn't have a clue about. Even though I'd read all about it, I was counseling people, I knew I had all the symptoms, I went down the list, but I couldn't. I wanted relief. Alcohol gave me relief way back when. But all I can remember is the way it used to work. I didn't remember that I'd be running my head and not, it wasn't shutting off the terrible things I was telling myself about me and the world. So, you know, I tried going to a counselor. She said that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous would fill that vast hole that we suffer from. It's a spiritual longing that we have. The Buddhists call it the hungry ghosts. Isn't that great? The hungry ghosts inside here. And there's never enoughness. And my boss told me, you either are going to, you know, when I showed up with the wine stains on my nursing uniform the next day, you know, red wine stains, you better, you know, you gotta do something else. And so I got taken by some people from my building that I was working in on Union Street, and these beautiful people took me to my first meeting. And you know, I will never forget my first meeting, even though it took me a while to get sober after that. It took me another 6 months. I remember Frank Brennan, who's since passed. He was this he looked like Popeye the Sailor Man, and he was old back then, and he welcomed me. He shook my hand and said, "Endorse yourself." I'm like, "What the hell does that mean?" But you know, he was there, and it was a younger people's meeting. It was a Friday night meeting to go to in San Francisco, and I heard a nurse talk, and she ended up being one of my bosses at my first job, sober, and thank God for those people. And so what ended up happening for me was I continued to run the show with this crazy head that we have, and I was going to meetings. And I was, thank God, the women were talking about rigorous honesty, and the guys were talking about the steps, and I was understanding here. I couldn't read the book. I couldn't understand what the book said. I literally, we need help. I had a sponsor, but I couldn't hear it. And I ended up, the miracle of it all is that I did keep coming back. And I know there's some people that have come back and stay. I was one of those people that when I got it. Some of my friends, I love my friend Jill over at 2250. She always talks about being the educational variety of spiritual experience that talks about in the back of the big book. I got it. I didn't realize I got it. I was not going to tell those girls about me drinking and using. Every time I go away with my boyfriend, who was still drinking and using, it's okay, you can still use cocaine. It's the drinking that makes you a problem. And so, amen! You know, anyway, and it didn't shut off the brain either. So nothing worked for me anymore. And I was sitting on that couch, and I'm not going to go back to those meetings. I'm not going to tell those women, because I hadn't told those women I'd been using. And I'd been on retreat with them all weekend. And something clicked. I knew I was screwed. I was totally screwed. And that, to understand that you're totally screwed, what a relief. And I ran to her house and said, "Please, please, please, can I do that first step? Please, 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 can I work these steps?" And I really begged her. And what happened was this beautiful program as set up in the big book was shared with me. And you know what, you guys, if you're looking at that fourth step, the truth will set you free. I'm telling you. I met with my sponsor today. There's some stuff I didn't want to tell her. I don't care how long you're sober. There's stuff I don't want to tell her. I did not want to discuss this. And I always know those are the ones I always have to talk to my sponsor about. It was just, it's nipping at the brain. Tell your sponsor if you've got something like that going on. And I ended up, I want to talk about YPG. So I went to YPG. Yay! I went to YPG. I think one or two of my friends on Zoom may be on there, but they went to YPG with me. And we went to San Francisco, and we went to the step meeting, and it was awesome. And it was it was not as big as all this. And I learned to start getting along with people. And at 2 years sober, I was at YPG, at the Icky Pop. Was it Icky Pop? And I wanted, so all that stuff that's in your head, and that less than, and I'm not pretty enough, and I'm not this, and I'm not that, I went to YPG, to Icky Pop in Boston. And my friend was, all the guys liked her and didn't like me because I was so self-centered, I think. That's just how it was. And I was very obsessed with men. And so, thinking it was going to fill the hole inside. you know, I worked the steps and I've done a really good job, but I still have this old idea. So I went back to the hotel room and I was thinking about committing suicide. And I was 2 years sober and I'd made my amends to my family. I had really fun, wonderful, beautiful relationships with my girlfriends. But just that emotions, those emotions that rise up. And I went back and I did the 4-step out of the big book, and I missed, you know, it was all about sex the first time. The second time I wrote that inventory, it was about relationships and what I could have done instead in all of my relationships, female, male, whatever it was. And I really got to do a deep dig. And I really got to see what I could do instead. My sponsor helped me with that. And I was listening to CDs that said, run the other way from the people that you were usually attracted to. And my husband and I ended up, I would have never dated him a day before. Never. He was too nice. And he said the same thing about me. And he was just too nice, and he was 37 years with my best friend, and we walked through AA together. We were, you know, we sponsored a lot of people. We always sat separately. We sponsored a lot of people, each of us did throughout the years. And what I learned from that inventory was that I love everybody. I love everybody the same. And that who's ever standing in front of me is the person I'm loving right now. And, you know, we got to walk through sobriety together because we live the principle of life. And but we were still crazy, and we had a lot to learn. And I did end up going to another program to deal with my relationships. Like, I had to have really good relationships. I've been an Al-Anon a long time. It was after we got married and he wasn't acting right. So I went to Al-Anon, and I have gone to that sense, and I know it's an outside issue, but it really helped me. And I had a, you know, his family, my family, I made amends a long time ago, but before my parents, my mother died and my aunt died, who were my two closest female, somebody had suggested that I write down a list of all the things they did right. So I'm saying it because we do the, you know, when we make the amends, we talk about what we did wrong and all that. But we're so self-centered. You know, we are really self-centered. We don't tell them what they did right. You know, I mean, we live that kind of life. I mean, I have beautiful relationships with my family. But I sat down with each of them and went over the whole list. And I did it. My husband died unexpectedly. We were expecting him to get a liver up here at Tampa General, and they did a procedure and he died of sepsis. It was horrible. But I did the same thing. I wrote down all the things that I thanked him for. You know, all the joy, all the years. And you know, we moved just from San Francisco when he got sick in 99. He was sick for a long time. I got to be his wife. I got to be the breadwinner. I got to say, it's okay if I don't have kids, which I really wanted to have kids. But we learned that we sacrifice in this life so that we can live a good life. And we moved to New York. That was not for us. We weren't in the city. We were up in the north of the city. And they didn't do AA right, by the way. But I'll tell you, when we moved down here, AA rocks down here. It is the best. I'm telling you, it's just like San Francisco. And you guys, that all these newbies, and you know, we got it going on here. There is no excuse why to not work the steps. There's somebody who's going to help you walk through becoming a different person. Because the person who came here will not stay sober. Will not stay sober. I paid back all the money I needed to. And recently I did an inventory, and there's some stuff from work. I retired and then I'm back there part-time. And I actually made amends to the girls at work at 4 years sober. And because I saw my behavior. And there's always room to grow. There's always room to grow. Because humility is the key. And thank you for letting me share.